This is Lights, Camera, Author, and I'm Jim Juno, and this is where authors talk about movies, television, and everything in between. Now, when Mike Anthony moved to New York City to become an actor, he imagined being under the bright lights of Broadway, living a life full of fame and fortune. Instead, he took a job not on the stage for a Broadway show, but behind its bar, and found a life full of meaning. He has a new book out called Life at Hamilton. Sometimes you throw away your shot only to find your story. And Michael, welcome to Lights, Camera, Author.
Hi there. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, your book, Life at Hamilton. Now, this is basically the story of, well, first off, it's your life story, of course, but it's also the story of the time Hamilton rolled into the Richard Rodgers Theater where you were tending bar.
That's right. Yes. It's a book that came about very much by surprise. It sort of organically grew out of stories I'd been sharing on social media. Cause you know, I was experiencing these incredible things every day as Hamilton was becoming, you know, this worldwide phenomenon. And the stories started to get shared beyond my social group. And before I knew it, they'd grown quite a bit, and a little bit of a community had grown up around them, particularly on my Facebook page. And the book grew out of that.
Yes, and you, the first chapters, you were talking about meeting Lin-Manuel Miranda, of course, people who are familiar with the New York stage, and actually, I guess, movies, if you consider, when you include Mary Poppins Returns. Lin-Manuel Miranda is one of the biggest stars in the world right now, but he was cup guy to you, wasn't he?
Yes. It's embarrassing to say now, but this was during In the Heights, and it was before he was, you know, incredibly well known. And I had never met him, and I didn't even know his name at that point. And I was working behind the bar as they were doing rehearsals that day. And we were getting ready to open up the theater. The next day was going to be the first preview for audiences. And he came up to me and he asked me if I could get him some cups, because we had recently started printing souvenir cups with the show's logo on them. And I said, yeah, I can get you some cups. You know, are you a, you know, do you work here? And he said, yeah, yeah, I'm with the show. I'm with the show is what he said. And I was like, oh, okay, great. Yeah. Then I come back in a few weeks and we'll have those for you. And then later on that night, I went into the theater to watch a rehearsal happen, and the lights came up, and there was that guy, the cup guy, standing center stage. And then I picked up a playbill, and that's how I discovered who exactly that man was.
Now, was this for In the Heights, or was this for Hamilton?
That was In the Heights. The first time I met Lin was back at In the Heights. Yeah.
All right. And in your book, you said you knew right away that this guy was special.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was very clear. I mean, Hamilton, of course, became, you know, a worldwide sensation. But In the Heights is an amazing piece in its own right. You know, it broke all sorts of barriers itself. And yes, on that first night, he, you know, just his brain works in a way that the average brain does not work. It's so fast. It's so quick. It's really extraordinary to watch. Just for instance, again, this was before I knew anything about Freestyle Love Supreme, which is his hip hop freestyle improv group. And one night that In the Heights, the sound system went down before the show was supposed to begin, and the audience was getting restless while they tried to work out the whatever the technical problem was. So Lin came out on stage and started to talk to the audience, and he talked to maybe 5 or 10 people, you know, just small talk. Where are you from? What did you do today? What's your name? Just, you know, the basics. And then he went on to do this 15-minute improvised rap, using all of that information that he just gathered from the audience. Wow. And it was stunning to listen to. And the show never went on that night. They never fixed whatever the problem was. So the audience never got to see the show. But as they were leaving, there was this buzz in the lobby because people felt like they had just seen something quite special. And of course, they had.
Yeah, and I was reading your book, and you got to see Hamilton in its form, in it, what I want to say, formative stages. A lot of people don't realize that before a show goes on, there's so much work that goes into it, and cutting scenes, tightening up scenes, making a what to leave in, what to leave out. You got to see all that, didn't you?
I did get to see some of it at least. It was, yeah, for that month-long period, the preview period, things continue to get tweaked. And there were some times when they'd be working on something on stage. So Lynn was rehearsing right in the lobby, right in front of the bar. And I talk in the book about this one particular time where he was working on this one line, and he was just going over and over it again and again, slightly changing the rhythm or picking a slightly different word, just until he found the exact right sound that was in his genius of a brain. And as I say in the book, I knew it was like watching a maestro, a maestro, a genius. It was like watching Michelangelo sculpt David is what it felt like. Because it's I mean, that is the power of Lynn's genius. It's just it's just so in the air.
Now you when you were growing up, of course, like we said earlier in my intro, you wanted to be an actor,
Yes.
but you, well, you ended up on Broadway. I'll give you that. Yeah.
Yeah, I had gone to college and graduated with an undergrad degree in acting, and then I went to grad school and got an MFA in acting and moved to New York to be an actor. Yeah. And I took this job as a bartender, expecting I'd only be, have it for a very short time. I thought that would be my quote unquote day job that just got me by until my acting career took off into the stratosphere, which did not quite happen. So 14 years later, I was still behind that same bar, bartending when Hamilton came in.
Did you have any experience being a bartender before then?
No, I had none. And I mean, I tell this story. I've been on stage in front of many, many people before. I have never been as nervous as I was the first night I was bartending. I mean, I was having a panic attack because there's a crush of audience when intermission comes. You have 1,000 people coming out who want to get their drinks, and I just knew nothing about bartending. And the one of my first customers asked me for a Cape Cod, and I was like, oh. Sorry, we don't have the ingredients for that. And he was like, oh, okay, well, do you have any vodka? Yeah, of course I have vodka. He said, okay, and cranberry juice. Do you have any cranberry juice? I said, yes, that I have right here on my little gun that I have. And he said, okay, I'll have a vodka cranberry. So I made his drink, and he walked away, and my manager said, that is a Cape Cod. So I went home that night, stopped at Barnes and Noble on the way home and picked up a Bartending for Dummies book, and that was my introduction to bartending.
Oh my gosh. So but you caught on quick. You're a quick study, as they say.
Yeah, quick enough. L luckily, the drinks we make on Broadway are not terribly involved because it's all about speed and serving as many customers as we can as quickly as possible. So I'm not making like crazy martinis or anything like that. Most of the drinks that I make, the name of the drink tells you what's in it. So it's mostly a gin and tonic, Jack and Coke, stuff like that.
No rattlesnakes or anything like
Not a whole lot of rattlesnakes,
that.
no.
I love the stories that you tell in the book. Now, you tell stories about celebrities, which I'm going to get to in a moment, but you also tell stories about non-celebrities
Yeah.
that come into the bar, Make-A-Wish kids. Some people who basically saved up for a whole year to come see
Yeah.
Hamilton.
Yeah.
They're on Broadway. Those were stories that are just as interesting. I just thought were as fascinating as the celebrity stories.
Yeah, and for me, those are the stories that are really meaningful. I mean, the celebrity stories are fun, and I've met some really interesting people and people that have been idols of mine in one way or another. And those have been fun, but there's nothing like watching what the show has meant to people. You mentioned the Make-A-Wish kids, and that happens a lot, that we have the Hamilton works a lot with the Make-A-Wish Foundation. And to know that a kid kid who is struggling with typically a very serious illness. And, you know, we don't know how long they might have left on Earth. And they're asked, what do they want to do? What's the one thing in the whole world they want to do with their very precious time? And they chose Hamilton. And that really hits you in the gut when you meet these kids who've decided they wanted to come to a theater to watch people sing and dance together and tell them a story. And that should be all we need to know about how important theater is if it's someone's wish that's in that position. And on a daily basis, I was watching people affected in that way. You know, it's not uncommon for young kids. And I'm talking like early teens or even younger, you know, 10, 11 years old. They come in and they're like in tears just to be in the lobby, just to be there at Hamilton. They're so moved that they're bursting out into tears. And it's been really a really extraordinary experience. And it reminds me every day to be grateful for what I do.
And you also, and some of the stories in your book, bartenders, of course, we all seen the old TV bartenders where they come in and, hey, what's bugging you, pal? And, you know, but you also, you have some stories in there that, you know, but bartenders also provide, for some reason, comfort. Mm. I mean, there was a man who was going through a divorce.
Yes.
I remember in your book.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, it's different than the typical bartender where you're, you know, you might have a person there drinking at your bar for the whole night, you know, so you really get to chat with them a bit. In our situation, it's very brief encounters typically, you know, no more than a few minutes at a time. But yes, that was this one case where this man had, he had just gotten a text message and he looked up with tears in his eyes and he said, I'm sorry, I'm going through a terrible divorce right there in the lobby of Hamilton. His life was sort of falling apart. And my bar partner, Marie, ended up having this conversation with him where she was offering him comfort. And by the end of it, he was laughing because Marie is this fantastically lovely person. And so it's not the same as a typical bartending job where you really are something of a therapist, but every now and again we've had some emotional encounters,
like the child with Down syndrome who didn't have enough money for the drink.
Yeah, you try to make me cry, because I'll tell you, I'm an emotional person too. And when when these stories come back to mind, I cry almost every day at the theater. But yeah, there was this one case, this young guy, probably in his early 20s, maybe, and something akin to Down syndrome, and he'd ordered a drink and then a candy, and then he didn't have the money for it, for the candy. And I had already poured the soda, and he was so worried that I'd already poured the soda. And he said, you know, can I give you the candy back? And then I can pay for the soda. And he was incredibly kind. He was just a very sweet, lovely person. And I said, you know, don't worry, that's on me. And me giving him the free candy and soda, it was like I had handed him a winning lottery ticket. I mean, that's how thrilled he was just from this small gesture. And then and then when he walked away, the girl behind him asked me if she could buy his drink, and I said no, please don't worry about it. And then she left like a big tip, and then even the guy behind her did the same thing. He left an enormous tip on a drink. So that's one of the points of the book, is that they're really, as troubling as the world is and continues to be in a lot of ways, there's also a lot of good stuff out there.
Now, we talked about big tippers, and I got to add, now, one thing, I'm going to get to the story in a second, but I did not know Amy Poehler was a bartender before she hit it big.
Amy Schumer.
Amy Schumer.
Yes.
She was a bartender. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was back in the day. She, as many of people in the arts are, she was a bartender.
And she left you $1,000 tip.
She did. And yep. She,
not the only one, but we'll get to that in a second. Go ahead. Left you a $1,000 tip.
Yep, she this was actually the second time she'd come to the theater, and she left this $1,000 tip, which was unbelievable. And one of the people on our staff took a picture of the receipt and posted it on Instagram or Twitter, and within seconds, literally within seconds, I was getting emails from producers of various news outlets asking for an interview, because at that time, I mean, that's how desperate people were for any tidbit of information about Hamilton, because Hamilton was, in the middle of taking over the zeitgeist of the country. So they were looking for any news at all. And that became a fun local news story, and then it got picked up by, Good Morning America and some of the national outlets. And yeah, it was this fun little turn of events.
Now she came back and got a water for $5.
Yes. Now this, so this is the part that people don't know, that the first story went viral. This one
Yes.
did not. But yeah, she'd come to the show the second time, and I'd wanted to thank her for what she did the first time. But I just didn't see her. I didn't get the chance to see her, and I thought it just wasn't meant to be this time. So after intermission had ended, so the second act already began, and I was down by the refrigerator putting stuff away, and I look up and there's this young lady standing at the bar, and I was, "Oh, I'm sorry, so sorry. What can I get for you?" And she just got a water, and she paid with a credit card, and I said, "Thank you so much." And I wasn't gonna wait for her to sign it, because it was just a $5 water, and I didn't want her to miss any of Hamilton, so I just knelt back down to continue my chores, and then I noticed she was still standing there, and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Did you need something else?" And she said, "No, I just wanted to give you a tip for the water." And I was like, "Oh my gosh, that's such a nice gesture for a person to miss even a second of Hamilton, to give a bartender a tip on a $5 bottle of water." So I handed her the receipt. Again, I went back down to the refrigerator, and 10 minutes later, when I had gotten back to the receipts to start plugging everything into the register, I found that she had left not $5, but $2,500. She left a $2,000 tip for that bottle of water.
Gosh.
And then I found out later that was Amy's sister. Amy had sent her sister so that she had, she could maintain a low profile.
Oh
So
my
that
gosh.
yeah, that's the sort of and there are lots of stories about Amy in that vein. That's the sort of generosity you're dealing with when it comes to Amy Schumer.
Now we talk about all the people you've met and stuff, and you've met Barack Obama,
Yes.
which I can tell, and I met him once before he became president. I can tell you he's a real cool guy.
Yes.
My brush with greatness, that's it. But now then you go through, I like how on one of your press releases, you said it was like a whiplash going from Obama to Mike Pence.
Yeah, or from Obama to Trump, for
Oh,
sure.
yeah.
Yes, it was just such a I'm a I lean towards the left side of the political spectrum. So the years of George W. Bush's presidency were not easy for me psychologically. And then Barack Obama was elected, and it was just, to me, it was this enormous breath of fresh air, and I was just a real big fan of Barack Obama. So meeting him was extraordinary. And the for the 8 years that he was president, I felt different. I just felt different every day than I did for the 8 years of George Bush's presidency. I felt like I could relax a little bit. And then Donald Trump got elected, which to me was an enormous shock.
Don't remind
And
us enough.
yeah, right. Yeah. And you just you it's hard to get two people that are on further ends of the personality spectrum, I guess you could say, to go from Barack Obama to Donald Trump. It was just like you said, enormous whiplash. And then when Mike Pence came to see Hamilton, the whole political firestorm sort of came right to our front door.
Well, it seems like to me, it seemed like that was Pence begging to cause a scene, because let's face it, the man is ultra conservative, and to the point where, like, like homosexuals are an abomination.
Right.
I mean,
right.
things, and I'm not trying to tear him down, but these are things that he's actually said. And being on Broadway, there's a fair amount of gay presence on Broadway. So mm-hmm. I just think he was kind of asking for that situation.
I did wonder how he ended up there. Yeah, because you'd have to think he would have realized it was going to cause something of a situation, or I don't know what the right word is, but he had to know there was going to be quite a reaction to him coming to that show, and there certainly was, and it ended up being the most electric night of theater that I've ever been a part of, because the audience, when he took his seat, the audience saw him walk into the house, and suddenly everyone realized he was there. And, you know, the whole night, obviously there was a ton of Secret Service and all of this extra security, and people all night long were asking why, you know, what's going on? Is somebody here? And we weren't allowed to say, for obvious reasons. So they suddenly realized what it was all about when Mike Pence walked in. And then for the whole show, the audience used their reaction to every moment of the show to send a very pointed message to Mike Pence about how they felt about the president-elect's positions. For instance, there's a line in the show, immigrants, we get the job done. And that line brought the house down because, of course, you know, Donald Trump had run his campaign, a large part of it was focused on building this wall and
anti-immigration.
You know,
yes.
Yes. Right. So that line, it was so loud. The actors on stage, I mean, they could barely continue because people were just insane in their reaction. And I've never been more proud to be in New York City than I was in that moment. And the whole show went on that way. And then at the end of the show, a letter was written by Lynn and Jeffrey Seller, the producer, that was read to Mike Pence at the end of the show, this very respectful letter. And yeah, it was just a really, you know, a lot of times theater doesn't, art, you know, there's this joke about artists' work not having its full value until way after the artist is dead, typically. But on that night, art was alive, and it was making a difference right in that room right then, and it was an extraordinary thing to be a part of.
One story I really enjoyed reading was about your friend Fran and the friendship that developed between her and Robin Williams.
Yes, Fran was in her when she worked with us for most of the time. She was in her 80s. She actually just passed away. She was 93 a few months ago. She was an extraordinary lady. And in the book, I call her the bathroom directions lady. She was the one who pointed people towards the restrooms. And she was just a once in a lifetime sort of a woman, you know, just a real spitfire. Her brain was as sharp as it had ever been. She never lost a step, even in her 90s. And she was so funny and just so alive and very dirty. You know, she had this very blue streak. she would call me over and there would be this gleam in her eye, and I knew she had a new joke for me, and I would start to blush. You know, you just knew what she was gonna be saying. But Robin Williams did a play called Bengal Tiger at the Baghdad Zoo at our theater, the Richard Rogers Theater. And he developed this friendship with Fran that was incredibly special to watch. They just hit it off immediately. And if you had ever met Fran, you would know why. It was very clear why Robin loved her so much. But he came out to the lobby before the show every night, and he and Fran would sit in the couple of chairs in the lobby, and she would tell him these jokes, and Robin would he would be hysterically laughing. This became like his warm up for the show, just listening to Fran tell jokes and just laughing hysterically. And it was this beautiful friendship that developed. And I tell the story in the book. At the end of the run of the show, Robin got gifts for everybody. He got dog tags for everybody in the theater. Robin Williams, by the way, is just another, he was an extraordinary human being. You know, I've never met a lovelier guy, and he was a genius in every way. But he was one of the kindest people I'd ever met. So he got these dog tags for everybody as a gift. The only person who did not get dog tags was Fran, because she got a diamond necklace from Tiffany's.
Wow.
That was her gift from Robin.
So let me ask you, you got to meet Anna Kendrick, your,
yes.
the schoolboy crush.
That's right.
And you came off looking really smooth, didn't you?
yeah they were filming a bit of her show, her HBO show called Love Life. There was a scene shot in the lobby, and they wanted me to be there as the sort of the instructor. I was going, me who knows almost nothing about bartending, as we've talked about, I was there to show the actors how to be Broadway, you know, how to pretend to be a Broadway bartender. So I was just on set all day that day. And I've long loved Anna Kendrick. I think she's just adorable in every way, and funny. And she was so great. And there was this one moment where we walked past each other and we sort of bumped shoulders, and she said, oh, I'm sorry. And I said, I mumble. I don't even know what came out of my mouth. Something to the effect of, no, me, sorry. And that was my auspicious introduction to Anna Kendrick.
Well, that's rather suave, I would think. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Suave is definitely the word to describe me. Yes.
I got to ask you now, you know, it's been how many months now since Broadway closed down?
It's almost a year. We closed down March. I think it was March 17th, somewhere right in there.
For the mid-March. Pandemic. Right. How have things been since then?
For me personally, I mean, it's been very hard, obviously, for actors and everyone in the industry. It's in New York City, because it's not like an actor can just go and get a job now as a waiter or something, because restaurants were closed down as well. And, very difficult for me. I happened to write this book during this time, and then a second book that just got published today, actually. So I've been able to keep myself very busy. It just happened to fall. The timing of it just happened to fall during COVID, that these things were happening. But for the average person who works on Broadway in any capacity, obviously a very difficult time financially.
Is there any word on when Broadway may open back up?
Well, Dr. Fauci is recently been quoted as saying sometime in the fall, possibly, you know, depending on how well the vaccinations go and how many people decide to get them and things of that nature. But at the moment, he's thinking sometime in the fall. So still a ways away.
Right. Still a ways. But well, I'm so glad that you're, you know, able to keep things going with the book. And you said you have a new book now, another newer book, which just got published today. What's the title of that one?
That one's called Love Dad, How My Father Died, Then Told Me He Didn't, which is an entirely different, an entirely different subject. I had my father passed away, and then I ended up having these experiences that were very difficult for my scientifically oriented brain to understand. And it ended up just vastly changing my perceptions. And it culminated in this series of events. Actually, a part of the story is told in a new Netflix show that just premiered last week called Surviving Death. And a part of my story is told in that series.
Well, fantastic. Well, Michael Anthony, thanks for being on Lights, Camera, Author today.
It's been my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Now, you can order Michael Anthony's book, Life at Hamilton, Sometimes You Throw Away Your Shot Only to Find Your Story, from Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. And if your own brick and mortar store is open in your area, then go in and order it from there. Until next time, I'm Jim Juno, and this has been Lights, Camera, Author.